Hello, I'm Aaron Lohr, and this is the Endocrine News Podcast. Today, we're talking about a specific class of endocrine-disrupting chemicals that can be found pretty much everywhere. An abstract at Endo 2026 looked specifically at the effect these chemicals can have on the thyroid. The title of that abstract is Bisphenol A and Alternative Bisphenols S, F, Increase proliferation and growth of thyroid follicular epithelial cells and disrupt thyroid histology. Joining me today from the Weiss Lab at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine is the presenter of that abstract, Kaylee Carolland. Kaylee, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what is BPA? Where is it found? And what do we know about the possible health risks regarding exposure to it?
Yeah, so BPA, or bisphenol A, is an endocrine disrupting chemical with a symmetric structure with two methyl groups and two hydroxyphenol groups, which is widely used in the production of polycarbonate plastics and epoxy resins. A lot of people think of BPA in the context of plastic water bottles, but it's found pretty ubiquitously in day-to-day life. In addition to plastic bottles, it can also be found in canned food liners, cash register receipts, caulks and adhesive, vinyl flooring, sports equipment, even medical products like catheter tubing or dental sealants. And because of the breakdown of some of these consumer products, studies have even found BPA just in house dust. So It's pretty much around us all the time. Unfortunately, even with it being so ubiquitous, there has been research showing that it can have some significant developmental effects. Exposure to pregnant women and infants have been shown to cause impaired brain development and some neurobehavioral disorders, early puberty, altered reproductive organ development, and increased susceptibility to obesity and diabetes later in life. And because of the structure of BPA, it can act as an estrogen mimic. And estrogen is crucial for fetal development. And so BPA can also act as a modulator of placental growth, vascularization, and immune-tolerant uterine environments. And also due to its ability to mimic estrogen, there is also some new research coming out looking at its ability to potentially increase the risk or aggressiveness of estrogen-driven cancers like breast, uterine, or ovarian cancer.
So we've been hearing about BPA a bit in the news over the last several years, and many consumers are aware of the dangers regarding BPA. So they're looking specifically for labeling that says BPA-free. But is BPA-free the same as risk-free?
Definitely not. I think my tagline for this project has become, just because something is BPA-free doesn't mean that it's bisphenol-free. So there are a ton of other bisphenol compounds, BPS, BPF, BPC, BPE, the list goes on and on. And companies usually use these alternative bisphenol so that they can have that BPA-free label, but there are still these compounds in their products. There are also all types of other endocrine disrupting chemicals like PFAS, phthalates, or parabens that also could be included in a product that's labeled as BPA-free.
Now, you recently presented an abstract at Endo 2026. We talked about a little bit earlier about BPA, BPS, and BPF. What were you hoping to learn through that work?
Yes, so we were hoping to assess the effect of all three of these compounds on thyroid histology and function. So we were hypothesizing that despite BPS and BPF being commonly used as BPA alternatives, they are not biologically inert and can negatively impact the thyroid, because BPA is understudied, but BPS and BPF are even more so. And so we really want to get a better idea of what these compounds can do biologically.
Mm-hmm. Any specific reason why you focused on the effects on the thyroid specifically?
Yeah, so the thyroid, as part of the endocrine system, is known to be quite susceptible to different classes of endocrine disrupting chemicals. And despite the study of BPA with some hormone dependent cancers, thyroid and bisphenols hasn't really been thoroughly investigated, despite the hormone dependent aspect of thyroid and thyroid cancer. And then more specifically for like my project and our lab, in other cancers, BPA has been shown to impact the Wnt beta-catenin signaling pathway. And the Weiss lab has done a lot of work to show the importance of Wnt signaling in thyroid cancer. So we were definitely interested in the thyroid carcinogenicity potential of bisphenols, especially with the thyroid cancer rates rising.
Yeah. All right. So why don't you tell us, what did you do in this study?
Yeah, so we had two arms of this study, one being an in vitro arm, the other being in vivo. So for our in vitro arm, we took our Nthiori 3-1 cell line, the human thyroid follicular epithelial cells. And we first grew these in 2D culture and treated them for 5 days with either a DMSO control or a range of concentration of these bisphenol compounds from 10 to the minus 4 molar all the way down to 10 to the minus 10th molar. We also grew these enthiocyanin cells in a 3D culture in 5% Matrigel so that they form spheroids and treated them with 10 to the minus 7th either bisphenol or DMSO for 1 week to assess the spheroid area growth and cell viability. And then for our in vivo study, we gavaged mice with either DMSO or 10 mg per kg of BPA daily for 3 weeks and then resected the thyroids for analysis.
And what did you find?
So, interestingly, in our 2D cultures, all three bisphenols at the highest concentrations, around 10 to the minus 4 or 10 to the minus 5 molar, either killed the cells or didn't have a significant effect, which we kind of expected just because that was a very high dose of a toxic compound. But at the lower concentrations, we actually observed an increase in cell viability, as assessed by a cell titer glow assay. So we're thinking that this could potentially be indicative of more growth or proliferation or increased metabolic activity driven by the exposure to these compounds. And again, we saw that across all three compounds. So we are very excited to see that there. And then in our 3D culture, all of our bisphenol treated spheroids grew larger than the DMSO treated spheroids. BPA treated spheroids had the most significant amount of growth, but there was also the trend in increase in viability here as well. I think our in vivo findings are some of the most interesting. Histological analysis of our thyroid sections showed a significant increase in cellularity and a decrease in the follicle size. And so our analysis of this was that this could mean that these mice are not making colloid appropriately or their thyroids aren't appropriately polarized. And we're thinking that increase of cellularity could also be a pre-malignant proliferation or a neoplastic type change. And so right now we're working on the analysis of BPS and BPF in vivo, as well as thyroid hormone analysis. But clearly, we think that BPA can impact the thyroid and suggest that our hypothesis was supported that BPS and BPF aren't biologically inert, at least in regard to the thyroid.
So let's talk about that little part there at the end. Why might it be concerning that your research found that BPS and BPF are not biologically inert?
Yeah, so there are no federal regulations on the use of BPS, BPF, or any other kind of BPA alternative. And so showing that these compounds aren't biologically inert is concerning because the exposure to these compounds are not regulated whatsoever. We're constantly exposed, and they could definitely be associated with some health risks, potentially not just to the thyroid. There are a bunch of other risks that need to be evaluated now that we're showing a lack of biological inertness.
And we're definitely not here to do any kind of fear mongering or anything quite like that. But should consumers be concerned about some of the things we're seeing with your research and others?
Yeah, so my work's definitely preliminary and more research needs to be done in this field overall. But because the data suggests that at least there's some aspect that these compounds can act biologically in our bodies, consumers could work to minimize their risk by not heating up food or anything in plastic, since bisphenols can leach out of plastics faster when heated, or just switching from plastic to glass to kind of help minimize that exposure and risk until we really know more about the extent that the risks of these bisphenols carry.
Very sensible. Is there a safe level of exposure to these chemicals?
That's a little bit debated. So there's not really a global scientific consensus on a safe level of exposure to bisphenols. The FDA maintains that whatever is currently found in food packaging is safe. And the Environmental Protection Agency has set the US's tolerable daily intake dose at 50 micrograms per kilogram of body weight per day. But in Europe, the European Food Safety Authority has defined their tolerable daily intake basically at zero, at 0.2 nanograms per kilogram of body weight per day. So at least the consensus is the lower the exposure, the better, but no one dose has been defined.
All right, so what do we still not know about bisphenols, and where might we need more research?
Yeah, so I mentioned that there are a ton of BPA alternatives, including BPS and BPF. So we definitely need more research to fully encompass all of these different compounds across organ systems, not just in thyroid or other endocrine organs. And like we just talked about, the safe levels, there is a big lack of studies looking at low dose chronic exposure effect of these compounds, as well as long term epidemiological data. Some new areas of interest are also transgenerational epigenetic effects, looking more at that epidemiology and high risk exposures. And then something I'm really interested in is the cocktail effect. So we aren't exposed to these compounds in a vacuum, right? We aren't only exposed to BPA. We could be exposed to multiple bisphenols at a time or other endocrine disrupting chemicals. Our lab actually published a paper in the Journal of the Endocrine Society showing that PFAS on the thyroid has a similar phenotype to BPA. So I would be very interested in looking at the combination of exposure to both of these compounds. And so more research is needed on the exposome as a whole. And of course, we could also benefit from research delving into developing new, truly biological inert materials, so we don't even need to worry about these compounds in the future.
Wonderful. Well, we are just about out of time. A big thank you to my guest today, Kaylee Carolyn. Thank you so much for being on the podcast with us.
Thank you. It was so fun.
That's all for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Is there a topic you'd like to hear me cover in an upcoming episode? I'd love to hear it. Email your suggestions to podcast@endocrine.org. That's podcast@endocrine.org. We'll be back soon with another fascinating dive into the world of endocrinology. Until then, thanks for listening.